This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msbnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Barrett Salee, who is over there near the ATL, and he joins us now, courtesy of our friends, Mick Ultra, Organic Seltzer Hotline. Barrett, how are you?
I'm great, guys. How are y'all?
We're doing great. We're going to talk plenty about college football, but with the news of Urban Meyer, I want to get your take on that, making the jump to the NFL. We heard comments from his live press conference that we carried here in the first hour of the show, but also, I mean, you've got to have a lot of Falcon fans just super excited about hearing the name of Arthur Smith.
I legitimately have no idea who Arthur Smith is. And that, like, granted, on Sundays, during the regular season, I am not focused on the NFL at all. I have it on in the background. I had to Google him. It sounded like he might be Arthur Blank's, like, stepson or something. So, yeah, I know nothing about him. I can't provide any insight there. But as far as Urban, look, I'm excited to see it. You know, I think he was a great recruiter, but I think that also led to his burnout quite a bit. So, you can just coach ball at the NFL level, and see where that goes. That might be easier for him to take. So, you know, he's a pretty darn good delegator of responsibility, and I think that's going to go a long way at the NFL level. He's going to have to teach his players, coach his players a little bit differently because he has the mindset, I think, of being hard on young college men, not professional adults. But, you know, I like it. I can't wait to see it. I think he'll do just fine.
Barrett, I'm interested, after Alabama wraps up their national championship Monday night, sort of where you view this team all time. A very different season. Obviously had to go through more, played a different schedule, and we've kicked it around with a lot of other teams. But how do you view this team, this Alabama team, as one of the greatest to ever take the field?
Yeah, I think it definitely deserves to be mentioned in the same breath as, you know, 2001 Miami, 2019 LSU. All of those comparisons, I think, are valid, and those questions are legitimate. I think that's a different conversation. Like, honestly, I think 19 LSU might beat 20 Alabama just because I think they have a better, more dynamic quarterback, which, again, you're sort of debating $50 stakes at that point because both are really awesome. But I think that what Alabama should, without a doubt, call themselves is having the most remarkable season in college football history, because obviously the COVID stuff was unexpected. They found a way to navigate through it in a way that I don't think anybody foresaw that any team could do what Alabama did. And they did it, you know, Nick Saban obviously wasn't there for one game, and he wasn't there for 3 days prior to another game, one of their biggest games of the year against Georgia. So, best team, I don't know. You're debating ice cream flavors or $50 stakes at that point. But the most remarkable season in generations, yeah, I think that's a fair way to describe it.
Okay, Barrett, I've got to go back to your pick because you said that Ohio State was going to win outright 35-31. So at what juncture of the game did you realize that you had screwed up?
After Ohio State's first drive, because again, I don't want this to sound like a, you know, I really don't want this to sound like a what if Colt McCoy didn't get hurt thing, because that's not where I'm going with it. But when Trey Sermon got hurt, I mean, it was like Ohio State got punched in the first round of a heavyweight fight and kind of lost its bearings. And even though they tied it up at 14, you know, in the first half, it just never seemed like they got into a flow. And I'm not saying they would have beaten Alabama had Trey Sermon not gotten hurt, but they, I think, would have certainly put up a much better fight. It was almost like they had no way to adjust, which I think is kind of surprising considering, you know, I know Justin Fields was the playmaker, but, you know, they had to expect that Alabama was going to do a lot to shut down Trey Sermon because, I mean, he really was the focal point of that offense. They ran to set up the pass, even in that win over Clemson. So, after the first Ohio State drive, maybe the second, when I think they went three, not the second one, too, they might have gotten one first down. It just felt like, yeah, they were discombobulated and they staggered for a little while. And against Alabama, you can't stagger at all. And obviously, I think that is what – I wouldn't say it again. It's not the Colt McCoy Texas thing. Alabama probably still would have won had Trey Sermon got hurt, but they were hurting. They had no idea what their identity was, you know, after he ultimately did leave the game.
Barrett Salee, CBSSports.com, at Barrett Salee, joining us here on Three Man Front on the Michelob Organic Seltzer Hotline. Barrett, I mean, we love you, but I think it'd be irresponsible for me not to ask, after picking Trevor Lawrence to win the Heisman, then picking Ohio State to win the national championship game, why do you hate Alabama so much?
I did not pick Trevor Lawrence on my ballot. I did think that he would win it because of reasons that I think are legitimate. I thought that because three of the top five players are Alabama players, that they would legitimately have some votes taken away from each other. And on top of that, I think that place and time, when we voted, when our ballots were due, you know, Najee had just scored five touchdowns. Trevor had just beaten Notre Dame. And I think I thought that a lot of the buzz about Devontae going into the ceremony was because of what he did against Notre Dame, which literally had nothing to do with whether he won or not. So I was wrong about that. But again, Bama folks, I had Devontae Smith number one on my ballot. I did not have Trevor Lawrence. I just thought, based on the situation, that Trevor might have a better shot than ultimately he did.
All right, Barrett, we did our, you know, two early top 25, kind of ran through that earlier in the week, and I'm looking down the list of teams that, you know, could contend for a college football playoff berth next season. And Alabama's going to lose a lot, but I would never remove them. Clemson, obviously, we know what they have coming back at quarterback. I think Ohio State has some real questions of what they will be. Notre Dame is going to be decimated, totally different team. A&M loses that offensive line. The most productive player in school history at quarterback is going to be gone. Florida, ton of weapons are going to be gone. Oklahoma obviously looks like they could earn a spot. But is the door open for a team like an Iowa State, a North Carolina, an Iowa, maybe a Miami even, to sort of shoot up the ranks and potentially be in next year's college football playoff?
Yeah, I think so, because you look at, I mean, I'm not saying they will, but you look at what you need to have a dynamic quarterback, right? And some of the teams that you just mentioned have that. You know, Sam Howell might be the best or one of the best returning quarterbacks in the country. De'Aaron King at Miami, combined with Rhett Lashley again, is big. It's really, really big. So Brock Purdy at Iowa State, like teams that you just mentioned, by and large have veteran quarterbacks who have proven to be pretty darn good, and in some cases great. So yeah, I think that door absolutely could be open. And then on top of that, you look at some of the usual suspects. You know, Bryce Young at Alabama, DJ Uiagalelei at Clemson, quarterback X at Ohio State. Yeah, you kind of look around and say, okay, they're really good teams, and obviously they're going to be in the mix again, but will the gap between the best of the best and the pretty darn good be as wide as it was this year? No, I don't think that would be the case at all. And in reality, Cole, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that's kind of the question you were asking is if the gap between those teams is going to shrink a little bit, and I think it will.
Yeah, I think more so, is the field expanding or shrinking as far as teams that we realistically believe could make the college football playoff? Because I feel like the last three or four years, we've been able to go find five to seven teams and say, yeah, this is about it. And I don't think LSU was included in that preseason last year, but I don't think A&M would have been included this year. And they were close. They had a shot at it. But it's interesting to look at, all right, do you think it's expanding because more teams could possibly get in? Or is it shrinking because there really is only four or five teams that are going to have a chance to make this thing?
I think to make the playoff is expanding. But I think that also means there are more teams that are potential playoff teams that really have no shot at actually winning it, right? Because really – of the four playoff teams that we've had over the last, since it's been in existence, really there's never been a situation where all four legitimately have a shot to win it in retrospect. Well, maybe 2014, I guess. But, you know, I think a team like Oklahoma is going to be, I think a team like Oklahoma will probably join the group that can win it next year if their defense is anywhere close to what it was this year. But Notre Dame will probably fall out of that group. You know, we'll see about Ohio State. But, yeah, I think there are more teams that have a shot at making it. But in reality, the teams that have a shot at actually winning it, you know, whether Notre Dame drops out of that and Oklahoma jumps in or whatever, it's probably still going to be around the same number.
Now that Jim Harbaugh has a new contract in Ann Arbor, who's going to be fighting for their jobs next year nationally?
Yeah, Harbaugh, Pruitt, obviously. I mean, he might be fighting for it right now. Blay Helton is definitely in that mix. I think those three are the ones you look at and say, okay, something's got to happen, and something's got to happen now. Outside of that crew, I don't think you're going to have somebody who's really, really on the hot seat in the sense. Like, in Pac-12, you just sort of throw away what happened this year, no matter what team you're on. That's just the way it is. Chip Kelly, maybe next year if UCLA struggles, although I don't think that's going to actually happen, because I think they showed a little bit of promise in the few times that we saw them this year. So I would say it's Harbaugh, it's Pruitt, and it's Clay Helton. And really beyond that, I don't think that there's anybody right now that sort of stands out, barring a 3-9, 4-8 disaster, which, I mean, there are a lot of coaches that would be on shaky ground if they go 3-9 or 4-8 as long as they're at a big, you know, big program.
So Clay Helton is essentially the new Gus Malzahn. I mean, you can say throw out what happened this year, but the dude went 5-1, and you're not the only person that's saying this. A lot of people nationally are saying he's on the hot seat, but he's just not going to get over that hump. He's going to be on the hot seat every year. It's kind of ridiculous if you think about it.
Well, yeah, but I think, you know, you kind of throw out what happened this year, and optics-wise, barely beat Arizona, barely beat Arizona State. I know, you know, ifs and buts or whatever, all that, you know, some things you can't say on air, some analogies you can't say on air, but if they go 6-6 or 7-5, whether he deserves to be fired or not, he's going to be fired, right? Like, that's, you know, there's a difference of should he be and will he be? And I'm a pretty big Clay Helton fan, but I think people in that administration and decision makers at USC are not. And I think that's really the most important part.
All right, Barrett, finally, non-sports related question, something that came up earlier in the show. You're a TV guy. We talk about TV all the time. We're all the same age. Did you ever watch Three's Company growing up?
Yes, I did, but not really on purpose. It was one of the Rain Delay shows on TBS a lot for the Braves. So I did see it. That and Sanford and Son were like the two go-to.
Yeah. Oh, Sanford and Son, that was obviously the go-to of the Braves Rain Delay. So if I told you that there were two cast members from the state of West Virginia on that show, who would you guess they are?
Dude, I have absolutely no idea.
Okay.
No, who are they?
Don Knotts, I didn't know he was from West Virginia, and also Joyce DeWitt, who played Janet there. She was the lesser hot roommate.
I would never have figured that out.
Okay, well, we try to inform and entertain. It's Barrett Salee, CBSSports.com. He will entertain you with his college football knowledge at Barrett Salee there on Twitter. Barrett, have a great weekend, and get the parade started. Maybe Arthur Smith is coming to the ATL.
Woohoo! Can't wait for that. Yippee.
All right, Barrett, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
See y'all.
Barrett Salee joining us in the Mick Ultra Organic Seltzer Hotline with zero sugar, zero carbs, and only 80 calories. Try cucumber, lime, peach, pear, or spicy pineapple.
This is Three Man Front.